Up here, on the ceiling. It's me, Aruba Instant On, that Wi-Fi 6 ready network you've been hearing about. Blazing fast speeds, performance, check. All the must-haves for home or business. I love the look on people's faces when they set me up. I mean, I practically set myself up. And then, kapow, they're off and running. Instant On, we love you! What? I hear that sometimes. I'm a well-rounded Wi-Fi network, friend.
Experience blazing fast performance for your business. Learn more at arubainstanton.com.
Hi, I'm Jake McCallion.
And I'm Adam Shepherd.
And you're listening to the IT Pro Podcast, where today we're talking about one of the oldest tech businesses still in operation, IBM.
IBM, or International Business Machines, to give it its full name, has been around for over a century. It celebrates its 110th birthday this year, in fact. But don't worry, we're not going to be dragging you through the entire history of the company. Instead, in this episode, we'll be talking about its most important technical innovations and where it stands in the field of computing today.
So Adam, I've got to say, if I ask you what first comes to mind when you think of IBM, what is it?
Well, aside from the somewhat checkered history of IBM in the 1930s, which we're not going to mention in this podcast, the first thing that comes to mind for me is mainframes.
Oh, really?
Regular listeners of the podcast will know that I have a little bit of a bee in my bonnet about mainframes. We'll discuss this in more detail later. But the perception of mainframes as old, outdated technology is one that persists to this day and is largely incorrect in a number of ways. But what about you? What's your kind of go-to when it comes to IBM?
So for me, it's two things, actually. I'm really cheeky and I'm going to have two. first is the slogan, "Nobody ever got fired for buying IBM."
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. And the second, actually, is the film Hidden Figures, or specifically Dorothy Vaughan, who was portrayed by Octavia Spencer, who at one point in the film, you know, they're bringing in a big IBM machine and she learns how to work it, you know, kind of seeing where things were going for human computers such as herself. So, yeah, that's the two things that spring to mind for me when we talk about IBM.
Yeah, that slogan in particular is one of my favorite things in the world of IT, because it is such a prevalent attitude. The idea of just, you know, go with the safe choice and nobody'll get in trouble, which extends pretty much to every facet of business technology, not just kind of hardware purchasing and that kind of thing, as, again, I'm sure we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, the reason why it knocked around a lot when I first started as a technology journalist, I was on CloudPro and everybody kind of mentioned it in relation to, like, well, this is how things used to be, but now the cloud. And yeah, we'll see where we go with that anyway. So let's talk a little bit about the history of IBM. You know, we're not going to drag everybody through the minutiae of what happened from, you know, sort of 1911 to date. But there are some notable you know, things that have happened. So
quite a few, as it turns out.
Yeah, yes, it turns out our research dug up. It turns out that, you know, IBM's actually done quite a lot of stuff, if you can imagine that.
Stop presses.
It's big and important company. Who knew? So one of the kind of important things, we a while ago did a episode about, well, it's called Cool Kids Code with COBOL. Lovely tongue twister you put in there for me, Adam. but, you know, about kind of the importance of, I guess, you know, the classical Greek and Latin equivalents of programming languages. And Fortran is one of those, which, like I say, is developed by IBM.
Yeah, alongside COBOL, Fortran is one of, I think, the oldest programming languages that's still in kind of relatively widespread use. And I say relatively because it's commonly seen as a dead language, or, you know, near enough in the field of IT. But Fortran is designed for mainframes, you know, big iron, big monolithic machines running away in basements of banks and travel agencies and financial institutions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Fortran implementations on these kind of big mainframes running often legacy applications that are probably older than I am in some cases,
almost,
which is
certainly
a little bit alarming. They're still running Fortran in large part. And a big and consistent problem in the IT industry is that there are fewer and fewer engineers that know how these programs work, that know their way around COBOL and Fortran and how to program them, how to update them, how to fix any errors or security issues that may crop up. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem.
It is. Well, it's less of a problem if, say, you're thinking of making a niche for yourself as a programmer, perhaps. You kind of like start on, you know, JavaScript maybe and work your way up to Fortran, and you're set for life, man. You're set for life.
Absolutely. Yeah, we spoke about that in our episode on cool kids coding with COBOL, and indeed on our episode on obsolete tech,
which
came out mere weeks ago. So we'll link to both of those in the show notes. But yeah, Fortran and mainframe languages in general are kind of seen as quite outdated now, but they were originally an IBM invention.
Indeed. And speaking of IBM inventions, we can't go through an episode on IBM without talking about the company Songs.
Plural.
Yes, Songs plural. Not one, not two, but four company songs, including my top two of these are Hail to the IBM, which is the company anthem, and Ever Onward, which is like a rousing kind of rallying song, I think is what they call it, a rallying song, which reminds me of the school song that I had at sixth form, which was just called Onward and was all about how great Salisbury is, basically. And I imagine that Ever Onward is largely about how great IBM is.
I particularly like Hail to the IBM, yes, because Hail to the International Business Machines does sound kind of vaguely Skynet-esque, and actually probably would not be unfitting to resurrect in the modern day IBM with its focus on AI and smart technology.
I, for one, welcome our international business machine overlords. So, international business machine overlords, or IBM overlords, if you will, aside, let's talk about some of the other kind of key innovations of IBM. So, if you have a PC, which I am working on the assumption that you probably do if you're listening to this, or indeed are not like a baby living in the 21st century, then you have IBM to thank for that.
Yes, IBM was largely responsible for kickstarting the PC revolution in 1981 with the eponymous IBM PC. Clever and original naming not being top of the priority list.
It would have been original at the time, was it not?
Yes, but I'm not sure you could call it creative particularly. It's very much the Ron Seal of computer products. It kind of does what it says on the tin. It did, however, also give birth to the slightly more creatively named Windows. Gates and co. early on in their career were enlisted to build a GUI for the IBM PC, and Windows, as we know it, was born.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a funny story in itself, is it not? Because I believe that Gates and co., indeed, Microsoft promised that they could do this thing. IBM said yes, and they were like, guess we'd better make this thing that we just said we could do, but actually don't even really have a POC of.
Yeah, interestingly, that wasn't the first time Microsoft pulled the same stunt. Back in the early days of the company, they pitched a basic interpreter for the very first microcomputer, the Altair 8800. and had to build the interpreter essentially from scratch in like the 8 weeks before the demonstration was scheduled to take place. They didn't have an interpreter, and they didn't in fact have an Altair microcomputer on which to build it.
So what we're saying here in our episode on IBM is that while IBM have invented the personal computer, or PC if you will, Microsoft invented Crunch.
Yeah, pretty much.
To be continued in our future episode on Microsoft.
But yeah, the IBM PC kickstarted the PC revolution. Interestingly, within about 10 years, IBM had kind of become an also-ran in the PC race.
Yeah.
It was superseded by, cheaper and more affordable and in some cases more powerful clones of the PC platform from other manufacturers. But it only stopped selling its own PCs in 2005 when it sold its hardware division, or rather its PC division, to Lenovo.
Yes, it's easy to forget actually that it's the ToughPad ThinkPad range, isn't it, that was IBM.
It is indeed.
Yeah, it's very easy to forget that, especially given that both of us are relatively young in relative terms when it happened, in fairness.
Now, of course, IBM may have sold off its PC division, but there is one hardware area where it still manufactures its own gear, and that is mainframes.
Yes, so it's been building them since the 1950s, a pioneer once again, and it is still a core part of its business. Much like the whole Fortran COBOL thing, everyone thinks it's outdated and blah. It's not. $2.5 billion it brought in last quarter. That was billion with a B. Like I say, it's seen as outdated. It's quite often a ha ha ha, what legacy technology thing. But it's really good at certain things.
It's mainframes in general are still in widespread use in organizations like the financial services industry, in healthcare and travel. They're still used quite widely. They're really good at transaction processing in particular. They're really good at that kind of rapid number crunching in a way that other kinds of data center hardware just kind of isn't really as sophisticated in.
Yeah, I was talking to a company actually yesterday, which is not IBM, but they do event-driven architecture, and he was saying just how important actually mainframe still is, how much he ends up speaking about it. The company in question being Solace. And I thought that was quite interesting. Again, that this whole, mainframes, they're not just kicking around gathering dust because, nobody's figured out how to switch them over. Actually, like we say, they serve a purpose, and they are very, very good at this transactional computing.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, when companies are looking to retire their on-premise mainframes, often what they're looking at is moving to a cloud-based mainframe equivalent rather than just offloading everything to, the likes of Azure or AWS on a kind of standard infrastructure as a service model.
Sort of managed service providers who specialize in that kind of thing. Sometimes known as private cloud, but no words mean what they say they mean. So let's bring ourselves far more up to date, and let's talk about AI and supercomputers. So this is an area that IBM is known for and that it is very proud of, I think is probably the best way of putting it.
IBM has a very strong history in this area. If you know IBM outside of its business as an enterprise IT vendor, you probably know it as the company that built Deep Blue, the chess-playing computer that famously beat Grandmaster Garry Kasparov in 1996, becoming the first machine to win a game of chess against a human grandmaster.
Yeah, and this is probably the first kind of computer-related story I remember as a primary school kid. I think my my career was kind of laid out from that point onwards.
Yeah, it was very much the antecedent of AlphaGo,
yes,
which, of course, famously beat the world champion of Go back in 2014?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, well, I think, you know, it kind of first proved this idea of, you know, almost like the Mechanical Turk type idea that machines can do things and like beat us. And then it was one that actually did it with something that we consider very clever. It is very clever, you know, chess. Mm. That was kind of a big show. Watson, which came along later, came along and won a game of Jeopardy. That, you know, is a similar kind of idea. There was a big show of what its AI is capable of. But it actually, it has more interesting applications. And as far as I'm concerned, although this might be kind of just my personal interest speaking, it's supercomputing stuff, the HPC stuff, which obviously has some kind of level of AI in it, especially more recently. That stuff is far more interesting at what it does. So, for example, you know, they have got some that help biologists understand protein folding, gene development. You know, they have ones that work at certain labs. So the gene development one called Blue Gene, because IBM loves the colour blue and the word blue and everything's blue.
Da-ba-dee-da-ba-da.
Indeed. Or most recently, Pangaea 3, which was built for Total to accurately locate energy resources, which is actually, I've come to find out, a particularly common use case for HPC, like mapping oil wells. So that kind of thing, that's the practical application of the somewhat more flashy stuff that has it appearing on television going, it's beaten the human, what are we going to do? The game-playing overlords, they're on their way.
Yeah, since Watson's debut in the kind of public consciousness on that famous episode of Jeopardy, it's grown in prominence in relation to IBM's kind of wider business portfolio as kind of a linchpin of how IBM presents itself. So Watson, for those that aren't aware, firstly is named after the founder of IBM, Thomas J. Watson, which is an interesting bit of trivia, but it's also an AI framework. It's not a product per se. It's more a technological foundation for building AI systems using things like natural language processing, deep learning, all of those kind of bleeding edge AI development techniques that can be built into vertical specific projects for things like healthcare or energy and various different applications.
Yeah, I mean, if you happen to run into it yourself, you wouldn't know it, but it's most likely to be if you come up against a chatbot or, you know, some kind of e-commerce type situation. Those are the kinds of places that you'll find it most generally. Now, you mentioned healthcare there, so let's talk about Watson Health. It's become, I think, a bit of a jewel in the crown of the Watson division. Would you agree?
I think it's certainly become one of IBM's most favoured kind of case studies, if you like. It's an area that IBM likes to highlight in terms of its AI work, and particularly its development of Watson. Use cases like oncology, looking for evidence of tumours or cancerous growths in patient scans is one big thing that they cite on a fairly regular basis. Personally, I've yet to see a great deal of in-practice implementations of Watson Health that have delivered kind of significant benefits for the customers in question. It's entirely possible that just the timescales involved and the development cycles mean that it takes longer than other kind of technologies or solutions to deliver those kind of returns on investment. But for me, it still has some ground to cover in terms of proving its worth as a commercially viable solution, let's say.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. And I would say that IBM is not alone in that. You know, for just the longest time, I've heard people talking about how AI is going to do X, Y, Z in healthcare, and VR, AR is going to do blah, blah, blah in healthcare. And actually, in practical terms, it tends to come to nothing so far. You know, maybe eventually, but as things stand, I'm not 100% sold on it either. And this isn't just because I'm an antagonist towards the rise of the machines. Objectively, there seems to be, it's just not quite there yet. Just recently, actually, for us, we're recording this, you know, just as there was some news going around that rumours that IBM actually is going to sell Watson Health. Now, IBM hasn't commented either way, but according to the Wall Street Journal, this is something that they're considering. So what do you think? Are they likely to do this? Are they less likely to do this?
I think it makes sense from a business perspective. Watson Health seems like it's gone as far as IBM can take it. I think IBM have done a great job on the research and development side of kind of building a foundation in terms of the technology at play. But I think in order to take Watson Health specifically further to a place where it's actually viable for hospitals and healthcare organizations to deploy it, you know, on mass or, you know, in a significant way, requires a degree of medical technology specialization that IBM maybe isn't in a position to give it.
Yeah, I think you're possibly right there. They've got this little nub that's kind of quite specialized and actually possibly should be set free to do its own thing with somebody else, maybe. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that story. And, you know, if it were to split that off, well, that wouldn't be exactly a unique move for IBM in recent days because, was it towards the end of last year, towards the end of 2020, it announced that it was...
No, it was towards the end of 2019.
Really?
Yeah, because we were still in the office.
So we were.
I'm sure of it.
Yes, you're right.
God, how time flies.
This is because 2020 just didn't, like... Doesn't
never ended.
No. So, end of 2019, IBM announced that it's going to split off part of its business. Now, this was announced very much as a kind of like, or put forward as a like, oh my goodness, IBM's going to split in two, a la, you know, HPE and HP in 2015. It's not quite that. So, like the amazingly named NewCo, which will have a better name when this split eventually goes through.
Allegedly.
As long as it doesn't catch on too much. Fundamentally.
I don't think there's much danger of that, is there? Also, I think we should just take a moment to appreciate that over the 110 years of its existence, IBM still hasn't really nailed the whole naming thing, have they?
There is a lot to be said.
They're very literal thinkers.
There is a lot to be said for calling a shovel a shovel. Is it a new company? Yes, NewCo.
What should we call this new company?
But yeah, fundamentally, it's the managed services business, and IBM will become, you know, kind of more focused on cloud, hybrid cloud specifically, and back to our previous point, AI. So yeah, it makes sense. I don't know if there's a finish date in mind for this.
No, I don't believe they've made that public. I think there's still a lot of work behind the scenes that probably needs to be done in separating out the various elements of the business, kind of hiving off the consultancy and managed services portions to kind of extract them from the other elements.
Well, also at the point that this was announced, you know, there hadn't been some kind of global pandemic going on.
This is very true.
That wasn't a thing yet. Remember those days?
Yeah, it It's also entirely possible that IBM has seen a spike in, you know, demand for its managed services.
True.
You know, amid all of the companies having to suddenly rush to the cloud and, you know, move to things like remote working. I know a lot of organizations have turned to things like, you know, virtual desktop infrastructure in order to support remote employees. So it's entirely possible that they've seen a significant spike in revenue for that sector and are now rethinking their decision to hive it off.
Could be. Speaking of ready for new generating sectors, hybrid cloud, it sits on the foundation of its acquisition in, well, announced in 2018, completed in 2019 of Red Hat.
Mm. And as IBM goes, this is actually a relatively young segment of the business. It hasn't been in cloud for all that long when compared to something like mainframes, where it's been operating for more than half a decade at this point. And it's built on a kind of, you know, relatively solid foundation with the addition of Red Hat, all its existing technologies, the various kind of cloud architecture products, and particularly things like containers and Kubernetes, serverless infrastructure that Red Hat has been developing for years and years and years, and has really quite successfully integrated it into its existing product stack.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of it seems to me to have been just such a good move for IBM, actually just like such a good business move. Were you surprised when it happened?
I was quite surprised when it happened, mainly because IBM doesn't necessarily seem like it'd be the best cultural fit for Red Hat's kind of prior established reputation. Let's say Red Hat has a very good reputation for openness, and you know, it's been fueling and contributing to the open source community for decades. You know, it's got a really good reputation in the open source community for all of that kind of stuff, and there were worries from some sectors when the deal was announced that IBM's, shall we say, less open culture would start to kind of pollute that, for want of a better word. Now, that doesn't appear to have happened. If anything, there are kind of signs that, in fact, the opposite is starting to happen, and IBM is starting to relax a bit more to start sharing its kind of development and knowledge and resources with larger sections of the community. You know, it's not been a complete culture shift for IBM, but it's certainly not kind of put the brakes on Red Hat's openness, you know, culturally or technologically, which is a good sign.
It's one of those things, kind of almost strategically, it reminds me of HPE and Aruba, that it is a company that was acquired but hasn't been completely subsumed into the acquiring company, and, you know, actually sits there almost as like a business and an asset in its own right.
And absolutely,
that's kind of it. It's that model, even if Aruba is networking rather than like you know, enterprise Linux software.
Yeah, to make this conversation about hardcore enterprise IT even nerdier than it already was, there are a lot of vendors that kind of operate like the Borg from Star Trek and just subsume any acquired companies into the general mass and the general collective, naming no oracles, I mean names. whereas kind of a well-done acquisition kind of leaves the acquired company to do whatever it was already, you know, being successful with. And IBM is doing that well. It's not just Red Hat either. It's acquired a number of smaller cloud companies, for example, such as, you know, tool vendors, consultancies, Instana, which is a cloud monitoring service, and Seven Summits, which is a Salesforce consultancy, and they've kind of been acquired, have been rolled into the wider IBM structure to a larger degree than, say, Red Hat, but are still kind of largely being left to do what they were all doing well, rather than being kind of broken up and put on other things and fed to other divisions, which IBM used to do a lot more.
Yeah, I think maybe that's just a more global shift in how companies deal with acquisitions as well. I think, you know, maybe it's a not just an IBM thing, but a business thing. So IBM, you know, as a company, while you might, you know, kind of immediately it'll spring some big old servers into your mind, what does it actually do now? Because it's not that it's not that, but it's an awful lot more than that, isn't it?
So IBM is actually more balanced as a company than you might expect. You know, IBM likes to talk up the stuff it's doing with Watson and its AI development, but it also, as we've mentioned, does a lot of mainframe stuff. And if you're familiar with the mainframe side of things and the Z systems side of the business, then, you know, you might not be aware the amount that it does on the cloud side, the hybrid cloud stuff, the cloud storage stuff. IBM storage is something that does quite well for the company. And, you know, you've got the services, you know, it hasn't quite spun off its managed services piece, and it's still got a lot of kind of software driven services that it's providing for customers on top of the platform stuff, for want of a better word.
It's interesting that you use the word balanced as well, because when you look at its financials, especially its most recent ones, you know, the reports across each business unit are fairly even to within sort of 2 billion, which, like, that sounds like a lot of money, but, you know, kind
it's
of...
It's not that much for a company of IBM size.
Exactly, exactly. You know, when you start talking about billions, you're talking about silly money anyway, so... It's kind of, yeah, kind of almost within a statistical margin of error that each of these business units are between, say, you know, 6 billion operating revenue and 4 billion operating revenue, you know, kind of within that margin. And that isn't something that you see that much across companies. You know, there is normally at least one business unit that is like, bam, that is the one that is bringing in all the money. Or at least most of it. And so, yeah, it's quite interesting. But, you know, once again, I think the Red Hat acquisition and some of these other smaller acquisitions are at least partly behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's clear that hybrid cloud is something that IBM sees as very much the future of its business.
Yeah.
When we look at where IBM is headed and the trajectory it's on, it becomes quite apparent that CEO Arvind Krishna is really hyper-focused on establishing IBM as the enterprise cloud provider, and that company that can bridge the worlds of the on-premise data center, you know, whether that's running traditional x86 servers or IBM mainframes, and a kind of cloud-enabled future. It's also worth pointing out that IBM is doing a lot of research in the area of quantum computing, which we don't have time to get into now. We could devote an entire episode to quantum development and its applications, or potentially lack thereof, in the enterprise IT space. But that's an area where they're putting a lot of energy.
I think we might need a specialist for that as well, given that neither of us is a quantum physicist or a physicist at all.
Yes, disclaimer, we are not quantum physicists.
I think we've got a lot of disappointed listeners now. So, yeah, I think, you know, looking at it as a whole, IBM may be a venerable company, but I guess a bit like a lot of other companies founded about that time and just before, you know, GM's still going, Ford is still going, IBM is still going. And, you know, I wouldn't really expect it to, you know, kind of fall off a cliff or anything. It's got a pretty strong future, I think, whatever way you look at it and whichever way the tech landscape goes.
It's long been a cliche that no one got fired for buying IBM. And the truth is, that's a cliche for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. You can find links to all of the topics we've spoken about today in the show notes and even more on our website, www.itpro.co.uk.
You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn, and you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Don't forget to subscribe to the IT Pro podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to never miss an episode. And we'll be back next week with more analysis from the world of IT. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.
The IT Pro Podcast is brought to you by the Dennis Podcast Network.